Senator Olson. Senate File 1093, Bemidji Local Sales Tax Authorization. Senator Olson, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm very pleased to be here this morning with, on behalf of the Bemidji community to present Senate File 1093. This is a bill for approval of the Bemidji Sales and Use Tax Extension. Last session, both the House and Senate passed approval for a $3 million grant for design and pre-design of an event center in the Bemidji area. The anchor tenant is expected to be the hockey program at Bemidji State University. And I have with me today Mr. John Chatton, the Bemidji City Manager, and John Carlson, Chair of the Bemidji Event Center Finance Committee, who will be happy to present you with further details and answer any questions you may have.
Certainly. My name is John Chatton. I'm the city manager in Bemidji. Chairman Bach, committee members, I thank you for allowing us this time this morning to present and discuss this project that we have for the city of Bemidji. This is a project that has been discussed in our community for at least a decade. As a matter of fact, in 1998, the legislature approved a 1 cent local option sales tax for an event center, and the community did not carry through on that and take it to a referendum. And now we are again before you looking for an extension of a current local option sales tax to fund an event center for our community. This has been a process that has taken over 2 years. We've involved every segment of the community and will continue to involve every segment of the community in the programming and development of the center, which will be starting this week as we meet with our architects, Leo A. Daly, this week to begin that programming phase and to lay that out. This is a project that is definitely of regional significance. Having the BSU hockey team in this arena as an anchor tenant is not only fantastic for our community, but it's a facility that is needed regardless. And if we incorporate it into our event center, it will save the state several million dollars over what it would cost if they were to build their own facility. The state has already made an investment of $3 million in last year's bonding bill for this facility. We are using that money wisely. We're looking at, as I said, continue with the program and development of this facility, looking at land acquisition, looking at other needs, facility needs that we will have in the community. I guess that would end my remarks, and I will turn it over to Mr. Carlson.
Good morning, Chairman Bach, members of the committee. My name is John Carlson. I've been working on this project for the Bemidji community for 2 years. This started as Mr. Chatton indicated, over a decade ago, but it was brought back to life 2 years ago and instituted by a group in Bemidji called Bemidji Leads. Bemidji Leads is a group that looks forward into the future to try to decide what's good for our region and our area and to come up with ideas of things that would really help our area. One of the main things that came out was a community event center, a regional event center. The reason for that is Bemidji right now is a regional retail hub in north central Minnesota. We are also a regional medical hub in north central Minnesota. And we are also a regional governmental center in north central Minnesota. The piece that's lacking for us to be a true regional center is an entertainment facility, a facility that can attract major businesses. We've had many requests for businesses that would like to locate to our area, and they said, what are your entertainment facilities? And then when we indicate that we really don't have a large entertainment facility, sometimes that has a negative effect on whether they want to come to our area. Many of you may know the chief executive officer of North Country Health Services, and he has indicated that they are currently looking for a cardiologist to come to our regional medical facility. And when they were interviewing those potential cardiologists, they asked that same question: what kind of regional amenities do you have? And when we go through the list of parks and trails and lakes and all of that, they said, well, that's wonderful, but can I go to a show? Can I go to an Ice Follies? Can I go to a concert? And the answer is, well, if you drive to St. Cloud, Duluth, or Fargo. And so this facility is sorely needed in our region. We did, in fact, pass a referendum this fall in our city to extend the sales tax. And so we hope that we would get your support in extending that sales tax at this time. I guess we'd open it up for questions.
Mr. Carlson, how much does a half a cent local sales tax in Bemidji raise annually?
This year is our first year of collecting the sales tax. This is the first year for the Parks and Trails half percent. We're estimating, we won't get the final figures until early March, but based on the first 11 months, we're anticipating about $1.55 million, almost $1.6 million will be what we'll collect it in 2006.
And the bonds that you're going to sell for the project not to exceed $50 million, is that the city's share?
No, actually, what that is, the $50 million is the entire total project cost. What we're anticipating is, as Mr. Chatton indicated, we have the $3 million planning money. And so once the planning is done, we're anticipating that our share of the building will be about a $30 million maximum bond and then its associated cost. The $50 million is a total project cost as projected by trying to identify. Working it backwards, if we look at what the sales tax numbers are that we could collect, what is the maximum amount that the project could be? The project cannot, in our estimation, exceed $50 million total. And our share would be probably about $30
million. And on 30 years of bonds, there'll be enough revenue to pay them off then?
Yes, in fact, probably pay them off earlier than that. There's a requirement from the bonding sources that require you to have about 1.25%. So you have the reserves in case there's a bad year, down year, whatever. So those reserves, actually, by the time the total amount is collected, it would probably be about 25 years, but we have to look at a 30-year bonding cycle.
So, Mr. Carlson, we're done with parks and trails and the other things, so these bonds will only go to the arena?
Actually, the parks and trails will sunset after we just started in 2006. The parks and trails resolutions, the bills that were passed require us to collect $9.8 million, and our projections are that early in 2011 will be when that $9.8 million will be collected, and then the sales tax would sunset at that point. So in our bonding assumptions, we assumed capitalized interest of 2 years in the bonding assumptions.
Okay. So it is just one half of 1%, not one half plus one half.
That's correct.
Sir
and Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Olson, could you tell me, or maybe one of your witnesses, how big is the city of Bemidji now?
Senator Limmer, the greater Bemidji area is approximately 40,000 people, and this would be the only facility of its kind, really, in the north-central half of the state. Mm-hmm. Bemidji is centrally located pretty much right dead center in the middle of the state, and is about 2 hours north of Brainerd, if you're familiar with where that's located.
And this amount is for obligation bonds and the amount not to exceed $50 million?
That's correct, Senator Limmer.
I remember quite a long time ago, 16 years ago, the University of Minnesota came to us once requesting an extension of their hospital system in the university campus. And for $51 million, they built a close to a state-of-the-art 16-story building. That was 16 years ago. Now, granted, costs have gone up a little bit on construction, but how big of a facility are you building up there for $50 million?
Chairman Box, Senator Limmer, we're planning on a 200,000-square-foot facility. And when we were talking $50 million, believe me, it's the city's hope that this facility comes in under $50 million. We set that as our cap. When we needed a number for the bill, our task force finance committee looked at, well, what would be the maximum that we would ever possibly consider, took that recommendation to the city council. The council said, yes, that would be our cap. So we sincerely hope to do it for less than that, but construction costs are going crazy. I mean, they are going up double digits every year. We're seeing a lot of projects being bonded simply because it's cheaper to bond for them than have the increased construction costs.
Mr. Chair, we hear a lot of figures about costs of construction going up double digit, but when you really look at it from a historical perspective, it went up double digit for transportation costs when gas prices went up so high a few years ago. But things have leveled off, and things had leveled off prior to that too. So I don't think we're sustaining double digit increases right now. Have you studied the current prices? Because we're looking forward on this project, and I hope we're not anticipating double-digit expenses during the construction time of this facility because, gee, maybe $50 million of what you're planning on doing isn't enough. But I hear a lot of voices coming to the legislature rattling off this double-digit stuff, and I'm not sure if that's over. I don't know how long of a period of time that observation has been made, because I don't think one can really make a double-digit assessment of costs going up over a long period of time. I don't sense it. I'm familiar with the construction industry, but nevertheless, I'm assuming the public has already voted on this last fall, and they were given the dollar amount of $50 million.
Mr.
In
Chair,
that referendum.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, as my witness has explained, as Mr. Chatton has explained, the public was told at that time that the estimated cost for the project was approximately $35 million plus some additional cost to acquire property, and some of those expenses were unknown at that time. The figure that's being cited now is the total cost, but again, as was explained, we're very hopeful that it's not going to reach that level. The idea is to meet the community need, and a lot of input is being sought from the community at this point and has been throughout this project to make sure that we're not overspending on the project and that what we're doing is conservative and yet meets the need. The one thing we do know is that the longer this project is delayed, if it were to be delayed, it would become more expensive. We have seen dramatic increases in construction costs in our area, but you are correct. Just recently, they have tended to level off.
Senator Limmer, I believe Thursday we're going to have Department of Finance in for a joint hearing with the Finance Committee about the budget forecast. Might be a good question for you to raise with them, because I know for projects that were not included in the 06 bonding bill, when they came back to try for this year, finance told them to add, I believe the number is about 13%, and that's our own State Department told people coming looking to renew the interest in their project to add. So I think that's probably a very good question to ask finance how they arrive at those numbers. Yeah. Senator Moi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Olson, I apologize. I came in late, so I'm sure you could have talked about this, and I just didn't hear. Can you clarify for me how much of the cost is going to be projected for construction, and if you know how much of it is going to be for land acquisition, for what the total amount you're expecting the project to be?
Mr. Chair? I would defer. I have an idea, but I think that probably Mr. Carlson could speak to that more accurately.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wong, it's our estimation at the very highest end that the building costs would be $35 million, infrastructure costs of $10 million, land acquisition of $5 million, and that's how we arrived at the $50 million. Again, I'd like to reiterate that the $50 million is a cap. We had to look at, as a city, what could we at the very most afford, given what the sales tax collections were in the very first year, and using a modest 2% increase on those. And so working those numbers backwards, we really had to determine what is the absolute maximum so we knew what we were going into and what we could reasonably bond for with our credit rating of the city. And this is the number that we now, and again, as Senator Olson had indicated and Mr. Chetton indicated, we hope that we get this done for about 35 or 40 million, but we wanted to make sure that with the unknown of the inflation going on, that we had all of our bases covered. We didn't want to have a project end up at about 75% completion and not be able to finish it.
Mr. Chair.
Moore.
Mr. Carlson, so I believe you've already received $3 million from the state for planning dollars. If we extend the half-cent local option sales tax, is there an expectation that you might be back for some bonding dollars in the state bonding cycle for other sources of fund, or is the half-cent local option sales tax the only thing you're looking for?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Moi, yes, that is exactly right. Our anticipation when we requested the $3 million in planning money, at that time we suggested a split between the state and the city, and so that we would come back in the year 2008 once the plan and design funds plan and design phase is done, and then request assistance from the state in sharing the costs of that building. That's correct.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Moi, one thing that was described before you came in is that this is actually a joint project between the University of Bemidji State University and the city. Bemidji State University has needed a new hockey facility for a number of years, and by combining this project and share, they will be the anchor tenant for this project and will actually save the state several million dollars over the cost of building a separate hockey facility at Bemidji State University. So it's really viewed by both the college and the city as a win-win project, and I think local government and state government will also benefit by putting these two things together.
So, Mr. Chair, how much is anticipated to be raised, to be asked from the state bonding bill for the state portion, and how much will be the local bond portion that will be, I guess, you know, what the capital costs will be used by this half-cent local option sales tax?
Mr. Chair, Senator Moi, I don't believe the exact percentages have been determined and probably won't until next year. The city would be offering to pay at least 50% of the cost. Last year when this was discussed, there was initially a discussion of a 60-40 split between the city and the state. But depending on as we go forward and have that discussion, the city is expected to cover at least 50% of the cost.
And one final thought, Mr. Chair. Senator Olson, so what will happen to the project if you can't get the full bonding amount of, you know, let's say the expected $25 million from the state next year in 2008?
Well, Senator Moi, I guess what we'll do is we'll bring the project forward next year, and the expectation and we'll show this committee and the legislature as a whole what we can do with and we'll have a better idea exactly what the cost will be at that point. I would anticipate that if we do not have the approval for the amount that's needed, then it will either be up to the city to attempt to take on a bigger percentage of the responsibility, or they may have to scale back the project.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Olson, or perhaps Mr. Chatton, could you update the committee on the status of the feasibility study that is, I believe, ongoing with regard to this project?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoy, we did commission a feasibility study through CSL. That study has been completed. Obviously, there are several scenarios in there going from where the facility is tentatively breaking even, which would be typical for a facility of this kind, to where it potentially could lose some money. We're fairly confident that we can, during the process that we have now for doing the programming for the facility, having our consultants reaching out in the community to find out what the facility should contain and should look like and what type of operations will be held there, we're fairly confident that we want to come in with a project that is going to not be a burden to the local community.
And, Mr. Chair, so, Mr. Chatton, you've completed your feasibility study and the city's comfortable that this is a viable project for the city of Bemidji, and you feel that the ongoing costs would be something that is manageable for the city of Bemidji?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, yes, we do believe that this is a doable project.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Sundrum.
Senator Olson, I'm not sure, perhaps even counsel, if the question is better for someone internal to the committee. As this thing moves through the process and you start to look for the state bonding portion, will that need to go through the Minsku process?
Yeah, I don't know why that needs
And if you will, be ranked by Minsku as one of their priority projects to so-called make the list?
Mr. Chair, Senator Senjum, I don't believe that is the case. I think if it were funded directly through the school, for example, as with the land acquisition of the old high school property, that there's a bill for that this year, then that would have to go through the Minsku system, but I don't believe that applies to this project.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything else, members? You else want to testify on the bill? If not, without objection, the chair lays over Senate File 1093 for possible inclusion in the committee's omnibus bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
How much, Mr. Carlson, how much snow did we get in Bemidji?
8 inches, Mr. Chair.
Good. Coming.
How's snowmobiling up there?
On its way.
With any luck at all, Mr. Chair, very good today.
More coming.
Senator Day. Senate File 411, TIF District for Faribault.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. And we used to always have to take our snowmobiles up north, but we don't have to do that this week either. So I have Tim Madigan, who's the city administrator for the city of Faribault, with me. And basically, this is a legislation to use some balance in the of the TIF funds, and he can explain it. We did have one minor little amendment that we'll need, but we'll wait until we get that done. So maybe I'll let Mr. Madigan explain what we're trying to do. And we can end this out.
And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to Tim Madigan, the city administrator with the city of Faribault. We have a proposed legislation related to our downtown area. Downtown Faribault is a thriving area, but it's an area that is in need of revitalization. And our mayor has been heading a task force for improvements into the downtown area of Faribault. They are currently making the recommendations in March of this year to the city council as well as to the downtown community. And we are looking at significant costs for improvements to the streets, utilities, streetscape, as well as parking. One of the good problems that downtown areas have when they start to thrive is a parking problem. So we're wrestling with that issue with some of the newer development and activities that are taking place there. We are looking to use a multiple sources of revenues to finance the improvements, from special assessments for the properties downtown, utility funds from the city, potentially urban service district. One of the funds that sources of funds that we have identified are dollars left in the original Faribault 1981 TIF district That district is due to close out at the end of 2008, and there is a undesignated balance in that district that we would like to use towards improvements in the downtown area. We think that it fits the original mission of the district. A lot of projects have been done through that district, and this would certainly be in keeping with many of the improvements that have been done in the past. We have articulated a very defined area that the dollars would be used in, and we are not looking to extend the life of the district or do anything else other than being able to use the undesignated fund balance in that district for specific improvements in the downtown area of Faribault. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Mr. Madigan, the money that's going to be spent here, is it being spent outside of the original TIF district? Or?
Mr. Chairman, this is part of the original TIF district, the downtown area. The original TIF district includes a large area of the city, and this was one of the downtown area was one of the main project areas in the original TIF district. So it is a part of the original TIF district.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Day and Mr. Madigan, or maybe this is a question for council. What happens to the fund balance if the TIF district decertifies under those circumstances if we don't do this?
Mr. Madigan, you want to try?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the balance from the that's in there would be redistributed back to the city, school district, and county.
Anything else, members?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Day, anything further?
We do have one small amendment, Amendment A1, that we just, Mr. Madigan mentioned to me that in the original bill, we didn't have parking improvement related expenses, and with this, there will be some parking, and we wanted to add this amendment to the bill.
Senator Larson moves the A1 amendment. Any questions? Senator Limmer, have you seen it?
Mm-hmm.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. The A1 is adopted. Senator Senja.
Just a comment. And this is probably not unique to Faribault, but Mr. Madigan and I know as mayor, they do a great job in their city, and you know, they're looking to make it better. I just hope we can accommodate this request.
Senator Day, anything further?
We're trying to make it better, Mr. Chairman and members.
That's what we're all here to do.
Yeah.
Without objection, Chair lays over Senate File 411 as amended for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Senator Wigger. Senator Wigger has Senate File 606, North St. Paul TIF. Senator Wigger, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, committee members. Senate File 606 is a tax increment finance proposal by the City of North St. Paul. North St. Paul is located 10 miles northeast of the Capitol on Highway 36, home of the world's largest snowman. It's 120 years old, the community. And it has a downtown, something that very few suburban areas have in the region. And it's an area that is also struggling. And that is the reason we're here today, to help the city in managing its TIF districts to have more flexibility and also to extend the amount of time from 5 years to 12 years for the use of those funds. I have with me Scott Dudek, who is the fire chief, the community services manager, a member of the school board. He's a jack of all trades in our area, a person who gets the job done. And he's here to comment further on the bill. But, Mr. Chair, I would like to make an A1 amendment to put it in the form the city would like.
Mr. Chair, I'd move this.
Does everybody have it? Anyone? Mm-hmm. Senator Ortman moves the A1 amendment.
Mr. Chair, it just changes a reference to one of the TIF districts and also changes the time allotment from 10 years to 12 years.
To get the bill in the shape the author wants it, any discussion? Yes.
I've seen the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Do you support it, Senator Limmer?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's reasonable.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion fails. The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for hearing this today. North St. Paul, as Senator Weger has described, is an old community, a small community.
Chief, can we give your name for the record?
I'm sorry. Scott Dudek, Fire Chief, Community Service Manager, City of North St. Paul.
Thank you.
As I was describing, City of North St. Paul is a small community, or an old community. People really identify by the community, and we're working desperately in redevelopment in our downtown area, which is the area that we're describing these TIF amendments to take place in, just within our downtown area. We've had a lot of work that we've been ongoing currently, and we're trying to attract new businesses in the downtown so that we can be a tax-supportive community and not so reliable on local government aid. We have a lot of open space right now in our downtown with redevelopment, with buildings that we're currently have demolished and are seeking developers to come in to redevelop and bring our community back, very vital. And our community members are supporting that. 2 years ago, we had a reconstruction of a new city hall, police and fire station in the downtown, to which that was put out to the voters of the community. They voted that and passed that, and we're very grateful for that. And we started the redevelopment in the downtown, setting the pace with that building, and we'd like to continue to do so. And with your help in helping us with this sharing or transfer of tax credits in the downtown area would help us do that.
You can spend excess increments for things that are originally planned.
Just ended the term.
Yeah, that's a big deal, too.
That completes our presentation. We stand for any questions.
Senator Ortman.
How many people live in North St. Paul?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ortman, approximately 12,000.
Mr. Chair, is it a growing or a declining population in that area?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ortman, I'd characterize it as stable. There's the gentrification where we have people that have been there maybe going to some of the multi-unit dwellings that the city has established and then young families coming in, but it's stabilized.
Senator Ortman, have you ever had pizza from North St. Paul Pizza?
Village Pizza.
Village Pizza. Excellent pizza. They deliver to my apartment in Maplewood. Nice thin crust.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lerman?
We aren't taking final vote on this bill right now, are we? We are just in
suggesting lay it over for inclusion unless there's some objection.
So maybe
you'd like to take a final
A taste of that pizza might grease the skids a little bit. When we come up to that final vote.
Senator Weger, I think there's a message in that.
Mr. Chair, is that what it takes, Mr. Chair? Pizza, Mr. Chair?
Senator Limmer, it is also good for breakfast left over.
Oh. We have to get our work done first, committee.
We digress.
Anything else, members of the committee?
Chairman Bach and committee members, if I could, as Senator Weger described my title, Fire Chief and Community Service Manager. I think it's very naming of the city that we do, our employees do multiple roles in the community, and this is really a small town atmosphere. And again, I just reiterate the help on this would greatly help us improve the community.
Chief, what's the reason that we need an extension up to 12 years rather than current law, which is 5?
Chairman, we have some of the TIF districts that have been currently existing, and we're running to that time frame. And so there's some districts that are performing well, others that are not performing. So by giving us that 12 years would help us balance that out throughout the districts in their redevelopment area.
Senator Weger, who's the House member that represents Village Pizza?
Representative Leon Lilly, and he will be advised shortly.
He should spend some time with Representative Lencheski because she's real soft on the TIF idea. So just a little heads up. We'll be sitting in this room here in May fighting for North St. Paul.
I bet she likes pizza, too.
Maybe we'll have some village pizza in the tax conference committee.
You never know.
Chair lays over Senate File 606 as amended. Without objection, Senator Ehrman?
Objection.
Thank you, Senator Weir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members.
Chairman and members, thank you.
Senator Murphy here? She was over there earlier. Senator Rest here. Not doing very good. Senator Betzold was here.
Senator Murphy was here.
Staff put out an all points bulletin for Senator Murphy.
There's Billy back there.
Medicine's there.
We want it.
Here's medicine.
Senator Stephen? We're kind of hoping to take Senator Murphy first. And he's somewhere close.
Shoot, I'm going to go get some more coffee.
Who's the second author of their text?
From where? Red Wing?
It would only take a couple of minutes.
Let's do this.
It's a hard time to impose the levy, even though they're trying to move from their activities with that. These are multi-county areas.
Senator Johnson. Well, we were hoping to take all the deed tax proposals at the same time, and Senator Murphy's is not one of those. So there he is.
Oh. Sorry about that short delay there, Mr. Chairman. I was trying to get my hands on a copy of that NCSL staff report. It looks like I'll have one in about half an hour.
Very good.
And I think that Ms. Zoff would appreciate my input on that as well. But we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about Senate File 996. And Mr. Chairman, committee members, this doesn't cost the state a dime, all right? And this is
Senator Murphy?
Yes, sir.
That doesn't mean it's a good idea.
Well, Mr. Chairman, according to Senator Limmer, he said it doesn't cost anything. I like it.
But continue, please.
Mr. Chairman, Senate File 996
is, and Mr. Wheeler is here with me, and he kind of runs the Housing and Redevelopment Authority. Well, I shouldn't say kind of, he does, down in our neck of the woods. And the problem that we've always had in with these housing agencies is that they have to run everything that they do through the county board. And it's kind of at the whim of the county board whether or not there's any movement in the housing end. What this does, and this has been checked off with all the counties that are going to be the pilot for this project, but what we're looking for here is, you know, and this is the Southeast Minnesota Multi-Housing Redevelopment Authority and the Northwest Minnesota Multi-Housing and Redevelopment Authority. Both of these redevelopment authorities have approval from their boards to be here. And, Mr. Chairman, this is, like I said, this is a really good idea. Now, the housing authorities, you know, they can with approval of their board, can tax up to 100% of their levy. That's with the approval of the board. That happens about never. So there's this pent-up need out there, and we all know that one of the four legs of the stool to attract good businesses that pay decent wages is to have good housing stock. Unfortunately, in greater Minnesota, we're watching the housing stock deteriorate in a hurry. What this is going to do is it's going to allow these housing and redevelopment authorities to levy up to 25% of their overall levy. They could get, without the approval of the county board, they could go and get the other 75% if the county commissioners would say yes. But this kind of gets their foot in the door. And Mr. Chairman, you can kind of see with this handout, and I believe Mr. Wheeler is going to go through it, kind of what a 25% levy would mean for the counties down in my neck of the woods. And these don't look like real big dollars. It's like $109,957 in Goodhue County. But the way that these housing and redevelopment authorities use the money, these are huge dollars for them. And they're able to leverage and make this money work a lot harder than what it says on paper. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll let Mr. Wheeler take over. And
Mr. Chairman, member of the committees, I'm Joseph Wheeler. I'm the executive director of the Southeast Minnesota Housing Redevelopment Authority, and I want to thank all of you for giving us the opportunity to speak in front of you today on this bill. First of all, I wanted to point out that under Minnesota State Statute 469.033, Subdivision 6, provides that all HRAs can levy up to 0.0144% of taxable market value. And this has been, as long as I've been around, the last 25, 30 years has always been there for housing redevelopment authorities to levy taxes upon receiving city and or county board approval. What our bill proposes to do is, allow the HRA Board of Commissioners the authority to approve up to 25% of its levy authority, and the county board still would have approval of the other 75% of the levy authority. We're also proposing in this bill as well that the there would be a four-year sunset on this, and we'd be more than happy to come back and report to the legislature as well as the county boards as to the successes of this bill. The next page, what the 75% represents is what the county board has the ability to approve. Again, in Dodge County, that's 178,080 as an example, for a total, if we maximize that full 75%, would be $896,970, and that was based on 2007 levy approval or market value. What the 75% is primarily used for is project specific. Typically what we've used those funds for in the past when county boards have approved is workforce housing, housing rehabilitation for single family, mortgage revenue bonds, down payment assistance, family self-sufficiency program, rental housing development, commercial rehab, and sewer and water projects. So that's been pretty typical for us since we've been in existence since 1981. The next item I want to talk to you about is what that 25% represents. Again, Senator Murphy had mentioned what Goodhue County was, but if we were to maximize that, our potential in the four counties would be $298,991, and that's what we're asking this proposed bill to do, allowing the HRAs to approve that. What we use those dollars for is primarily for, I'm going to key off a little bit on information and referral. What we mean by information referral, if a city has a given need, such as a sewer issue or a water issue or a housing issue, these dollars provide us with that technical assistance that we'd sit down with the city to at least talk to them about what the problem is and maybe possible resources that they could access. Other types of things would be the typical things to keep the doors open, such as office space, insurance, reporting, those types of things. And so that's what we use the 25% for. The next page just shows you what the tax impact would have on homes at 100, 150, and 200,000, broken down by each county, because each county is a little bit different. We broke this down for you, representing what 15% would represent, 20%, and 25%. The next page just shows again the property tax impact in for Northwest Multi County. The next page actually is an example of what actually happened to us in 2007. You can see our proposed levy for 2007, which represents just the 25%. We had asked for $144,639 to cover those expenses. That only represents, by the way, the 48% of the 25% cap. So again, if this bill moves forward and is approved, it does not mean that we would be at the maximum 25%. We request what we actually need to operate in any in that given year. Again, you can see that each county, based on population, had their percentage. And then I'm going to flip you over just to the second half of that page and what we actually got approved. And you can see that Dodge County did not support any levy at all, and therefore, I'm going to use Goodhue County as the example. The original was 32% would have been their fair share of that initially if everybody participated, and Goodhue County's was increased by 40%. Or up to 40%. So that just kind of demonstrates some of the difficulties that we have when we get a county that does not play or participate. The last page is just a letter of support. Actually, in Northwest, they had a couple counties that actually adopted resolutions in support of this. I can tell you that I have met with 15 county commissioners and county administrators, and I did not hear any opposition from any of my commissioners that I talked to in our service area. So that's a good thing. That was much to my surprise. I can tell you, though, I did not talk to the Dodge County commissioners for obvious reasons, because I probably would have had a no vote in Dodge County. Along with that, I want to point out, I know the there's been some issues or some discussion as far as elected, we're not an elected body. County boards appoint two commissioners to our board of commissioners who serve five-year terms. Of the eight commissioners that are on the Southeast Minnesota HRA board, we do have currently have four elected officials on our board, two county commissioners and two mayors. So with that, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Senator Murphy, does Senator Stumpf know we're doing this for him?
Mr. Chairman, yes, he does.
Commissioners in Dodge County know we're doing this?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know, but if my constituents have to pay for the services that Mr. Wheeler provides over in Dodge County, and Dodge County is not contributing, well, then to Dodge County, I just say tough. You know, we either don't provide the service in your county, or you get on board and you play with everybody else.
Senator Lemire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Murphy, I'm looking at this handout that you made available to us on levy funds leverage, and it's talking about funds for workforce housing, housing rehabilitation, rental housing development, commercial rehabilitation. And I'm, is this projects that the government would be doing if this bill passes?
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, yes, this is, we come in for a project specific, and it may be federal and or state funds that are being applied for, as well as there may be a possible request to the county commissioners to appropriate a portion of our levy as matched dollars towards the federal and state grants.
I know, Mr. Chair, that a lot of these projects are coming in, and we're getting more and more government getting involved in what traditionally was the private sector in building homes, rehabbing homes, rehabbing commercial strips. And I'm wondering, at least in these areas that are requesting this, is there not a demand for private sector to do this type of work?
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, again, our organization, when we leverage project money, those dollars are made available to the private sector. So it's generally private contractors that do the rehabilitation. Primarily, same thing with new construction. If there's new construction being proposed, it's the private sector that we work with. We also work with for-profit and private developers as well to actually, when we do a housing development project, for example, we do the infrastructure type activities as far as acquiring the land and getting the infrastructure in, and then for-profit and nonprofit developers come in and actually do the construction within those developments.
Mr. Chair, is it Mr. Wheeler? Are you Mr.
Yes.
Wheeler? Mr. Wheeler, if it wasn't for these programs, would the private sector just go somewhere else? Or is this necessary?
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, we get involved in this because the private sector is not there to provide this, and that's why we get involved. Typically, on an affordable house, for example, the big market's been in the higher income price houses has been the primary ones. It's difficult to get a contractor to build, quote, an affordable home at $140,000, $150,000. So again, we have to look at a number of sources to, number one, get the house built at that price, as well as to attract local builders to come in and build those for us.
The reason I bring this up, Mr. Chair, is I have a city in my district who actually goes through neighborhoods and looks for housing that isn't quite up to par. Quite often, it's an older community, so it's the city goes out and looks for the widowed properties that haven't been maintained well. And they usually try to buy out that person, and then they, as a city, goes out and repairs or rehabilitates the house. Then they put it back on the market. They've kind of given the previous owner a check. Sometimes it's a very low check for what they're buying, and. I suppose it's in the form of beautifying the neighborhood, but on the other hand, I have to question the role of government sometimes. Is that the role of government? Should government be in the business of rehabilitating houses when there is a very energetic and robust marketplace that would love to do exactly the same thing? Where do we draw the line on the role of government? And I understand in outlying areas you may not have a population demand, or you may not have available businesses unless they had some type of assistance like this. But I'm always questioned almost every day here the role of government, and I, I'm And sometimes I'm kind of wondering if we may be competing with the private sector. I know that some of our senators here are very protective of union jobs. And when government gets involved, let's say with MNCOR, a product creating job program with our prisons, they're very careful to protect union jobs so that that doesn't compete. And as we're getting closer to more and more of these programs coming in, I have to start raising the questions. Are we as government getting involved in a role that we may not, or we may be competing directly with private sector on?
Senator Murphy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, out in the outlying areas, I think you'll find, outside of the 694, 494 Beltway or even the 7-county metropolitan area, you're going to find that, there's not a lot of folks out there that are going to invest in low-income or, modest-income housing. And I do believe it's the role of government in that instance, or for fledgling businesses, to step to the plate and help provide some assistance. This work's being done by private contractors. The problem in greater Minnesota that we have is people coming that are going to make the investment with the money. Now, if it's, a new subdivision where you're building $250,000 homes, that's one thing. And then we've got people that are going to do that. But when we're talking about rehabilitating existing housing stock or rental housing development, you're not going to find that. And, that's where the majority of our workers are being housed at. In greater Minnesota, which is completely different than the metropolitan area, 37% of all the wage earners are earning less than $10 an hour. 37%. Do you think they can own or afford to pay the mortgage on a $150,000 house? No, they can't even qualify for a $75,000 home. And even in greater Minnesota, a $75,000 home is terribly substandard. So I think that we've got a good mix of government entities working with the private sector in greater Minnesota in this regard. This gives them another tool to work with, and it provides some of those funds that are needed so that we continue to have, or so that we can hopefully move our economy in greater Minnesota forward. Right now, then the chair knows we're hurting a little bit.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Murphy, I'm fully supportive of what the multi-housing and redevelopment folks are doing. My question and concern deals with what's happening where you have a multi-county organization and one of the counties is not getting along with the rest of them. And I had a bill on the Senate floor that was similar to this yesterday, where there was a 3-county regional jail facility, and they're working through their organizational documents. And what the resolution was to allow them to resolve their differences in their organization, as opposed to coming and imposing this levy on Dodge County when apparently there's some disagreements about what's happening in Dodge County and the level of services that are being delivered or for whatever reason. So I'm wondering if there might not be a better approach to what's going on than just levying housing dollars against those residents when their elected officials apparently don't want to participate. And I don't know what's going on with these four counties, but I'm not sure that this is the best solution. And I don't know what kind of organizational structure and when that comes up for review or how they have resolved this, but I know in the joint powers agreement that I was working with the regional jails, they wanted to address this exact kind of situation in their organizational documents, and maybe there's some solution there, and maybe you or your witnesses could help me understand that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Skoll, in Dodge County, we've kind of backdoored Dodge County, actually. How we've served, we have communities there that most certainly have had an interest in developing projects, and to give you an example, at the city of Hayfield, they needed a new water tower, they had water issues, they had downtown revitalization issues as well as housing, and nothing was really happening through the county, through that process. We don't plan on shoving any of this down any county's throat, per se, but the 25% that we're requesting covers kind of the general overhead, and when I get back to the information and referral process, what we would do in Dodge County's case is we would levy those dollars, a small amount of those dollars, the $17,000 in the 2007 example, and we would make contacts with all the incorporated communities within Dodge County to talk about a project specific that may be involve all the communities within the county. Hopefully building support then from those communities, the following levy year we would come into the county board requesting X amount of dollars within that 75% to develop such a project. Now it's still up to the county board whether they thumbs up or thumbs down the project per se, but we're at least utilizing putting those smaller amount of dollars or that 25% dollars to use to develop a project and get the community support. We have communities that most certainly support that type of activities. The other thing is in Dodge County, we do have federal contracts. We do run the Section 8 Rental Assistance Program. We also have a project in Hayfield on affordable housing development, both rental and single-family development. And in West Concord, actually just wrapped a housing rehabilitation project for single-family for owners that are at 80% of the county median and below. So we do have some financial obligations and contracts within Dodge County as well. And with the shrinking dollars on the federal level, primarily on the administrative side as well as some of the housing assistance side, we need these dollars to, within that 25%, to support current programs that are currently operating in Dodge County.
Well, Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry, I don't have a name here, but
Mr. Wheeler.
Mr. Wheeler, currently the Dodge County Board could approve this 25% administrative or operational levy within Dodge County, and obviously they didn't. So there's something going on there that's not operational or working right or whatever it is, and the cities aren't communicating with the county board well, or and you know what you're doing is you're taking away the ability of the county board to have the levy authority on this 25%, and I'm wondering why that's not working, and is there is some other mechanism in your organizational documents that would allow you to make this work, and besides just putting levy authority on Dodge County.
Senator Murphy.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Skoy, you know, whatever's going on over in Dodge County, you know, the county commissioners aren't taking care of it, put it that way. Much like one of our counties that didn't take care of a jail issue, and now the state's going to shut their jail down. Because they ignored advice from a lot of the professionals, and they found themselves behind an eight ball simply because they didn't want to move their levy. They did not have the wherewithal to adjust their levy. This is a very small increase, that 25%. I mean, we saw what the numbers were. And whatever the issue is in Dodge County, I know that those folks need decent housing stock, they need good jobs, they need businesses that are vibrant, and they're not going to get it unless they get on board. Mr. Wheeler's right. We're paying, you know, with that 25%, you know, these are the minimal services that are being provided to those residents in Dodge County. It could be a lot better. Unfortunately, the county board doesn't want to get on you know, get on the train for whatever reason. And I haven't talked to those county commissioners. All I know is because of that jail issue, one of our county commissioners down in Wabasha got kicked off the board because he wouldn't pony up the resources necessary to fix the existing facility or to build a new one. And after 20 years of being threatened by DOC, you know, they finally decided that, you know, the people did, that it was time to get rid of this guy because he was the biggest detractor of the problem. But we all know how county boards operate, and that's how they operate. And, you know, I'm befuddled as to why Dodge County wouldn't do this small increase to maintain the services that they're already getting. It just, it befuddles me, especially knowing some of the, you know, Mr. Wheeler just gave you an example with the water tower in Chatfield. You know, that wouldn't have happened unless they stepped to the plate. The county board wasn't going to make it happen. You know, so maybe the locally elected officials at the city level, you know, need to work on their county board a little bit more. But sometimes you have to drag people into the 21st century, and that's kind of what we're trying to do here is bring them along. And this is all across county government, wherever you go. There's always these little conflicts between counties and cities. And you know, I don't think that we'll ever be able to satisfy everybody. But this is one way that we can continue to provide services, enhance services. And, you know, I would hope that this could be part of your final bill.
Thank you.
Senator Murphy, do you represent all of Dodge County?
I don't have any at Dodge County, Mr. Chairman.
Who represents Dodge County?
I think Senator Rosen has a portion of Dodge County. I think
Mr. Chair, I have Dodge County.
Oh, Senator St. John?
Every inch.
Oh, you have every inch?
Oh. Senator St. John, can we get your observations on Senator Murphy's bill?
Well, you know, I have to defend my county board. They're county boards are county boards anywhere in this state. They certainly, in my observation, and I'm there most of the time. They meet regularly with townships, regularly with cities. They're an active board. I wouldn't call them at all backwoods, and you didn't either, Senator Murphy. They are. they're an active county board in frankly an area of the state and Dodge County is by no means backwoods. You know, their proximity to Rochester frankly makes them one of the fastest growing counties in the state of Minnesota, and so they have certainly a lot of issues that relate to development and growth, and every county would certainly have issues related to housing, but I do respect their right to make decisions, and I think it, you know, if we usurp that right, I think we have to think about that very carefully. And I don't know a lot about this. I am sort of puzzled with respect, at least to housing, and I look at this certain page where it says the 25% levy authority covers the HRAs, and then it goes through to make a list. I don't see a piece of lumber on that. There's a lot of telephones and office expenses and so on and so forth, but I don't see a piece of lumber or a brick or anything like that. And I understand we need this to support housing, but I'd be far more favorable if I saw this money going directly into bricks and mortar.
Well,
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sinjum, I didn't mean any...
No, Mr. Chair, and I understand that.
Yeah. But, you know, I still feel the same way that, you know, this is the basic service that Mr. Wheeler provides for your county. And, you know, they ought to pony up a little bit. And to that point, Mr. Chairman, you know, there's no way that you can start separating these counties because of you know, willingness or ability to pay. It's my understanding that, you know, these are all formed as part of a federal guideline or state guideline. And you just can't, you know, drop somebody out because they may not want to pay or don't have the ability to pay. Now, I think not having the ability to pay is a viable issue, but, you know, when you're a bedroom community of one of the, well, of the hub in southeastern Minnesota, I do believe that you have the ability to pay.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Murphy, on that page that Senator Sengem was looking at, I see on the bottom of the page these dollars would also be used to support interfund loans to cover project shortfalls. Could I get some information on what project shortfalls we're talking about and why is there a shortfall?
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, we do have projects that are backed by like a TIF bond that might have been used to develop a housing development project, and county boards have approved X amount of levy dollars, for example, to support a debt service fund in the event that things don't go according to pro forma. I actually have an example in Winona. In Winona County, we have that occurring in St. Charles. It's the only tax increment financing district because of the market softening that it's not living up to its pro forma. If the HRA would have to use its own funds, which we refer to as the interloan funds, to make those bonds hold or continue to make those bond payments without the county board approving that amount in that 75% that they still would have that authority, we would maximize our 25% to make those bonds whole up to that maximum amount. That would be the only time that we would do something project specific. Mr. Chair, I do have Robert Beniak here. He's chairman of our HRA board. He's been on our board since 1979, and if you would allow him to speak, he can give hopefully this committee some of his experience being on the board for several years.
Mr. Beniak, welcome to the committee. Please tell me you live in Dodge County.
Well, quite frankly, I was born and raised in Dodge Center in Dodge County. My folks live in Dodge County, still in Dodge Center, and I catch some of the scuttlebutt on both sides, obviously through my executive director and from the scuttlebutt you hear via Dodge County. Unfortunately,
so Mr. Bennett, knowing that, is there some real serious controversy in Dodge County with their neighboring counties relative to this?
Okay, let me. I'm going to answer your question, but in a little bit roundabout way. In a perfect world, when you have to negotiate and deal with county commissioners, senators, House of Representatives, whatever, you're not going to please everybody all the time. It's an impossibility. And whether you can please them or not may not have anything to do with it because you run into personality conflicts. Not everybody is large enough person to accept this fact. So consequently, besides being able to go in and present dollars and cents to the county commissioners that will show a very good return for their investment for their counties, you're also dealing with this personality bit. And quite frankly, that's a very large portion of it. And from what I get via the scuttlebutt from the two counties, that originated the big problem. Not the dollars and cents, not the performance, methodology probably. Okay, we've run into some problems in other counties, usually on an individual basis. Winona County, for example, now all of a sudden popped up and we've been having some issues with them. Okay, what we have done, and this is in response to your comments over here, what we have done has authorized our executive director and our people that are directly involved. I got to skip down here. My notes I threw out. We're doing this totally different. To educate and to develop a PR system to try to get better working relationships with the people that we are having to deal with, that basically we have to ask for money to operate. not to do anything in particular, but just operate the funds, the programs that we have in place, Section 8, for example, rental assistance and whatever. So this has gotten to be a real big burden. Back in 1979, when I first started as a commissioner, we had one county, it was Wabasha. Didn't have this problem. We were dealing county-specific. As this grew and you're dealing with more counties, you're dealing with different people, different ideas, different personalities. And, yeah, this really gets to be a problem. So this request, very point-blankly, is to try and get enough money to operate the organization on a bare-bones system, cover our operating expenses. The expenses that we're requesting are bare-bones. They're nothing inflated. I answer to our county commissioners. We have a county commissioner on the board, happens to be from Wabasha County. Stockton has a mayor from Winona County on the HRA, along with, I believe, one of the county commissioners are there also. So, all representatives. So even though, like, for example, we had some issues with Winona County, we have elected officials on there, but we still have to answer back and forth and try to appease the people so that we can accomplish our purpose. The request for this operating authority, operating fund authority, this 25%, which you pointed out we didn't use all of, is just a trying to streamline this a little bit to eliminate some of the possibilities that we run into with personality conflicts, issues as far as methodologies, and something I didn't bring up. Not everybody on a county commissioner basis wants to deal with low-income people. That's another issue that we run into all the time. I'm not speaking very highly of county commissioners, but this is a fact in our life. You go down the street and you talk to 15, 20 people on the street, and half of them don't want anything to do with it. But we run into this for a problem. So we, realistically, what we're looking for is an authority to basically tax enough revenue so that we can operate the programs that we are there. Anything extra, county commissioners still have the okay and the authority to grant more money to do specific programs, specific projects. I don't think this request is stepping out of bounds. It's very minuscule, and I think it'll help streamline the organization so that we can maybe spend more time where we should instead of, PR is very important. We'll never be able to get away from that. But I think we can spend some of the time that we're spending here on more worthwhile projects.
Yes, Senator Moi.
Is it Mr. Beniak?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Beniak, if the county board of commissioners don't want to deal with poor people, then it's not a good place to be because that's what the county does. So I hope that whoever is on the county board would rethink whether or not that's a job that they want to do, mm-hmm. because that's what the county does, is deal with people, human services, et cetera. So.
Senator, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Beniak. I get the idea. This is your bare bones, turn the lights on funding. I mean, I understand what that 25% is for.
Pretty much, yes.
I think that's what you're doing. When you were expanding from Wabasha County out to include these other counties, was there any discussion about counties withdrawing from this too, or how does that structure work?
I might have to turn it over to the executive director to explain this, but yes, there are methodologies of withdrawal, but it's not as simple as saying no, I don't want to belong anymore.
Mr. Wheeler?
Mr. Chair, Senator Skoll. The statute kind of defines the process for county to come out, and as my chairman, Mr. Beniak, indicated, it's not an easy marriage to get out of. The county has to, number one, demonstrate that there's no longer a need. There's no longer a need for a housing redevelopment authority within their county. In other words, there are no low and moderate income residents. They have to hold a public hearing to that effect. Their other alternative is to create a county EDA. County EDA, of course, can have HRA powers and do that. And in Dodge County, they did create a county EDA. They are addressing some EDA activities but have not addressed housing. And again, we're kind of backdooring, working with the local EDA in Dodge County to start beginning that process again, or that relationship to get some housing activities happening. within the county. Once the county makes that determination, then they have to have the blessings of the other county that are part of the multi-county to come out of the county HRA, and then it comes back to the CEMSRE board, which has the final say whether to include or disclude that county once they've gone through that process. So I hope that answers your question.
It does. Thank you.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Wheeler, is there a joint powers agreement?
Mr. Chair, Senator, no, there's not a joint powers. There is, under Minnesota state statute, there is a process for establishing a multi-county housing and redevelopment authority. I guess, and then each county has to hold public hearings and go through that process to become part of the multi-county housing and redevelopment authority. The most important part of the multi-county is the economies of scale. And that's what we've discovered in outstate Minnesota, even up in Northwest Multi-County, that it is much more cost-effective to have a multi-county versus a county for obvious reasons. You would have more staff if you went on a county-by-county. So that's the idea. Everybody, when the boards created the Multi-County Housing Redevelopment Authority, that was the thought, that was the purpose, is that we're more efficient, more economical, especially with all the different federal regulations that we can have the staff resources to deal with all these new federal and state programs that come in into the area as well, and to share in those costs and to make it more affordable to the taxpayers. So I hope that I hope that answers your question.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman.
Do you believe that there's a legal requirement for Dodge County to participate and raise these funds through their authority to pay for the administrative costs?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I'm not aware of any legal side obligation. This has been a dilemma in Dodge, and my chairman, Bob Beniak, had indicated some of the other issues. But another example, this is what put the fear of God into us, which goes back a couple of years ago. Winona County cut 55% of our levy budget 1 week before the start of the fiscal year. Dodge County, we've been working with. We've been trying to backdoor things in with Dodge County to build a relationship. And we do have some very, very strong support from some of the cities. But those are the kinds of things. So if that county bails out, then what does that leave the other counties? And so our belief is, being a multi-county, if you truly believe in regionalizing a concept that's more cost-effective, we have to have the ability to at least have that carrot, or the ability to at least have enough dollars to keep the doors open and to work with the cities that have an interest to build the support to come to the county board for a project specific. And it has. It's been.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, it sounds like, from what I've heard, there's no legal requirement. It's just that you want them to participate, and they don't want to participate, Dodge County. And I think that it would not be a wise thing for our tax committee to take on as a precedent the fact that we're going to set a levy for a county over the county board's objections. And I think that would be hugely precedential, and I would hope that this committee would not take up this or even lay this over for possible inclusion. I think it's fraught with all kinds of peril for the Senate Tax Committee and the future of the Senate.
Mr. Wheeler, how did the Northwest Multi-County HRA get included in this? I see there's a letter of support from Pennington County. I'm wondering about Kitson, Marshall, and Polk County up in the Northwest. I see they have agreed to levy, but what is those other Northwest counties' position, do you know, on the bill?
Mr. Chair, this is a common issue that Northwest has as well, so we work together to put this legislation together, and that's how they've got involved. They apologize for not being here today. The executive director of Northwest, this was the 1 week that he was going to be out of state, and his chair didn't want to drive down from Baudette by himself without his executive director along with. So that's the only reason why they are not here today. I just, again, want to back up a little bit. When I'm talking to county commissioners, they understand the issue. And the issue is how do you deal with a county that all of a sudden, because of a change in the composition of the board, no longer wants to play? And how do you deal with that? And all of them thought that this made sense. This was a good approach for dealing with it. And so that's all I can pass on to you at this point.
There's that, Jim.
Mr. Chair, the Dodge County Board has not changed. It is the same board. I don't remember who the last person was that has left that board, but is frankly has not changed. And I know Senator Mouhet didn't mean disrespect, but I will tell you, the Dodge County Board is no less sensitive to poor people than any other board in this state. Not at all. They work hard on these issues. I know they do. And so I hope we don't characterize them as insensitive to the poor people, because they're frankly not, and they are a good board. The same board has been around for, frankly, as long as I can remember, at least ever since I've been elected. So it's not about a new board. It's about something else going on here, and I don't know. And let me just say, these folks do a good job. You know, the tensions between Dodge County and this organization, I don't know. I wish I would have known this was going to be up today, and then Dodge County is going to be an issue. I'd have brought them up here because and I would only hope, Mr. Chair, if this goes forward in the bill, that it doesn't go forward before we hear from the Dodge County people.
Well, Senator Sengem, I share your concern about the legislature just imposing a levy where the county commissioners don't support that.
Yeah.
And, Senator Murphy, I'm pretty uncomfortable putting this in the bill until we get some resolutions from the affected counties that they support it. I think it's a good idea, but I do think we need to find a way to get the counties on board.
Yeah.
Anything else from the committee members? Anything else? Anybody? Anybody else want to testify on the bill?
One more testifier.
Not the chair lays over Senate File 996, and Mr. Wheeler, it would help if you could communicate with Dodge County and tell them the tax committee would like their observations about the bill before we move forward on it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Murphy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Senator Rest, Senate File 632. Senator Rest, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members. Senate File 632 proposes to repeal the sunset on the mortgage and deed tax that is currently collected to fund the environmental response fund in Hennepin and Ramsey counties. This proposal, or this language, was added to the statutes in 1997. Its first purpose was to clean up the Superfund site in St. Louis Park, which since that time has become, I think, a real model of development on what was previously polluted land. Currently, the tax raises about $3 million a year that goes into the environmental response fund for projects across the two counties, often ones that would be otherwise ignored because they don't rise to a real high level. And so it's been a really good project and program for the two counties. I think you have a handout that looks like this, and it gives a little bit of a timeline again, starting in 1997, and then up to 2006. The sunset currently had been extended in 2002 to January 1st of 2008, and what the bill does is to repeal, it requests to repeal the sunset. There are some examples on the second page on the inside of the handout that gives some examples of what the impact would is on any given sale of a house. The for Hennepin County, there's a map that shows where the sites are. You can see that most of them are clustered in Minneapolis and near Minneapolis. And then the other side of the inside explains how the Environmental Response Fund is unique and how it provides grants. The last page just gives a list of the places that have received grants since 1997 and the program was put in place. We have two folks here today to give you their testimony, one from Hennepin County and one from Ramsey County. And Mr. Chairman, if with your permission, I'll just turn to them.
Thank you, committee. My name is Rosemary Lavin. I'm the Assistant Director of Hennepin County Environmental Services. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning. Hennepin County established our grant program in 2001, and what we tried to do was target sites that wouldn't be funded through other existing funding programs. So projects with end uses of affordable housing, green space, public use, smaller scale redevelopments, we tried to focus on those first and get assessment and cleanup dollars to them. The ERF dollars, the Environmental Response Fund dollars that we grant, are leveraged by other private, local, state, and federal funds. None of the funds are used for administrative purposes for the grant program. To date, we've issued over 130 grants totaling $16 million in Hennepin County to projects throughout the county, totaling nearly half of the cities in the county. The grants have helped to support assessment and cleanup activities of both soil and groundwater. They've also assisted with lead paint and asbestos abatement. The projects have resulted in a variety of end uses, residential, mixed use, green space, as well as commercial and industrial projects. It can take a while for projects to go from start to finish, assessment and cleanup being some of the first activities. We've taken a look at about 10% of the projects that we've granted money to, and an investment of $1.4 million of ERF dollars has resulted in a property value increase of approximately $57 million, creation of 200 jobs, and creation of 500 housing units, 300 of which are affordable. The need for the fund in Hennepin County really continues. We've got a significant number of the potential contamination sites in the state. We've got over 25% of the state Superfund sites. We've got 30% of the voluntary investigation and cleanup sites, and 15% of both the leak sites and the dump sites in the county, totaling over 3,000 sites of concern where ERF dollars could be utilized in the future. This is a really important program for us. It helps to characterize what can be an unknown risk in a community. Assessment dollars can be hard to come by for municipalities and nonprofits, as well as for developers. And this can help to quantify a risk, to characterize it, and then to eliminate it as well. It can put properties back into valuable reuse for the community, and it can help to create green space as well as affordable housing units. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Mr. Chair, Senators, Senator Rest, my name is Janice Rettman. I'm Ramsey County Commissioner serving District 3, and I appreciate the opportunity to appear before you and to request the removal of the sunset provision on the mortgage and deed registration tax. On behalf of Ramsey County, I want to first of all thank you, the legislature, for creating this tool and for giving us the opportunity to develop a program to aid in the redevelopment of polluted sites. Ramsey County has taken that vision and created a process that has helped us clean up unsightly polluted lands, create jobs, and provide new housing opportunities. The points I want to stress about the Environmental Response Fund that we affectionately call the ERF is, one, this is not a giveaway or free money. As part of Ramsey County requirements, ERF dollars must be the last in to fill the financial gaps. All other resources must be secured and exhausted before the project is approved and funds paid out. Because Ramsey County is a totally urban county, we established an equitable distribution of the dollars throughout the county. The board recognized that funds are collected on the sales and registration throughout the county and made a commitment that 50% of the funds will go to projects in the suburban communities and 50% in the city of St. Paul. We have identified at least 2,000 acres of polluted sites, not counting the TCAP and or the VIC sites, in Ramsey County, and to this point, we have only been able to help clean up 10%. But of those 200 clean acres, we are now generating new property tax dollars, providing jobs and housing. The land being cleaned up that would otherwise remain idle. Ramsey County is the only fully developed county in the state. Any new housing must be constructed on infill and often requires cleanup. Houses and neighborhoods that are currently located near a polluted site have lower values than they would if the sites were cleaned up and reused, thus benefiting the community and the current property owners. The same can be said that creating good jobs with benefits will help the neighborhood's economy. By lifting the sunset provision, Ramsey County will be able to secure federal contamination mitigation funding. Assurance of the continued funding puts Ramsey County also in an excellent position to be able to provide required local matching funds for the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency grants. Nick, Mary Lou, and Denise have prepared a handout for your review to highlight the actual work to date on the ERF. The bottom line is we'd like to continue to use this vital tool, and we respectfully request the removal of the sunset. Thank you.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is for the testifier from Hennepin County. How many Superfund sites do you have?
We have, Mr. Chair, Senator, we have 25 Superfund sites in Hennepin County.
And what's your name, please?
My name is Rosemary Lavin.
Slavin. Your Superfund sites, your 25 Superfund sites, you don't collect enough tax on your waste removal to pay for the cleanup and taking care of those 25 Superfund sites?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I guess to clarify about Superfund sites, because of the listing on the Superfund, Superfund dollars are typically used on the cleanup of those with an action to go back and to recoup those dollars from responsible parties. A number of those sites in Hennepin County have already been addressed with the initial emergency response actions. So there are some ERF dollars that may end up going to those in the future. Those are probably not the first sites that would be addressed through the ERF. The leak sites and dump sites are some of the primary sites that we're currently working on. The Superfund sites tend to be addressed through other means, through federal and state dollars.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Lavin, do you have a figure on the Superfund money? I mean, on the waste disposal tax money. Do you have a dollar amount?
I don't have a dollar amount on that.
Do you have a dollar amount on the mortgage and deed part of the money?
That we raise in Hennepin County? We raise approximately $3 million per year, and that varies based on the housing market, so that can go up and down depending on the home sales and the refinancing.
Mr. Chairman and Ms. Lavin, since the waste disposal tax is a stable amount, I'd really like to know what that is from both counties, Hennepin and Ramsey.
And Commissioner Rittman, how much does the tax raise in Ramsey County?
Between 70 and 80,000 a month.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry.
If I could ask the two witnesses some questions, how much has been collected in the last 10 years since 1997 when this started? Do you know?
Well, Senator Lemmer, if it's raising about $3 million a year, assume that we just do a rough guess there. It's about probably about.
Is that for each county or total?
No, in Hennepin County, it's about $30 million.
Okay.
And in Ramsey County, it's 12 times 70,000, which is.
Mr. Chair, Senator, through mid-September of 2006, $3,076,714. Since 2000, and we started our collecting revenue in 2003.
Mr. Chair, when this was started 10 years ago, I thought it was created to clean up these sites. And yet, I see here in the handouts that it's used for more than just cleanup. It's used for developing housing, creating public and green facility or spaces, and it's used by private and public for leveraging other projects. So tell me, how much, when this money is collected, how much goes toward kind of the original primary purpose, and that was to clean up sites, as opposed to now being parsed off and going to other purposes? Could you tell me how that's divided?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I want to be really clear that the money does go for just assessment and cleanup, and the statute allowed for those activities with priority sites in mind at the time. When I speak about the green space or housing, those are the end uses of the site. We do not put dollars into creating the housing units. We put the dollars into cleaning up the site so that housing can be built there or housing can be rehabbed or whatever the case might be. So the dollars are just going for the environmental portion, and the developer or the city has to have the dollars to put toward that end use.
So, Mr. Chair, Ms. Lavin, that $30 million that we referenced, at least for Hennepin.
Mr. Chairman, the math was rough. It's $26
million. Okay, $26 million. Are you saying that almost all of that went for environmental cleanup?
Mr. Chair, Senator, we have not actually expended all $26 million of what we've collected. There still remains, I think, about $8 million in the fund. We've granted approximately $16 million, $17
million.
It's all been spent on environmental assessment and cleanup.
Mr. Chair, the real issue is whether or not we're going to continue. Or are we going to recognize the sunset? We were told back when this started that was all the money you really needed, and that we'd, a 10-year sunset was sufficient. Are we revisiting it for another purpose? Or
Mr. Chairman,
I need a little history.
I believe
that
the original sunset. Excuse me. I believe that there was an original sunset to assess the value of the program, and then in order to have a review like we're doing today, an additional sunset was placed on the program in 2002. The first program was passed in 1997, and so this is an extremely proper review of whether this is a good public policy to continue this. We're asking for the sunset to be lifted. Last year, the bill came before the committee as well, and then Senate Taxes Chair Fogenmiller, I believe in at least one in one hearing in the discussion of this bill, suggested, well, maybe we need another review of it, and it might be more appropriate, instead of repealing the sunset, to extend the sunset for another period of 6 or 7 years so that the program gets oversight by the legislature. Now, clearly, the proponents of the program and continuing this would rather have the sunset just lifted, but there certainly is an argument that could be made that maybe a 10-year sunset brings the program back into the purview of the legislature. But I think that the success of it speaks to lifting the sunset rather than extending it again. So it wasn't a date certain, and then all the needs have been met, and don't come back and ask for this again. It was an opportunity, as are most sunsets, an opportunity for the legislature to review the policy that it had set and to see whether or not it warranted extending it.
Mr. Chair.
I think, Ms. Levin, about a third, almost a third of the money hasn't been expended that's been collected. Is there a number of pent-up projects in the pipeline, or what should our expectations be about the $8 million that you're currently sitting on?
Mr. Chair, a couple of considerations for that. Our program has been in place since 2001, and we've seen an increase in terms of the requests for dollars as the years have passed. Our program is getting more known by municipalities in the county and nonprofit organizations. So the program is under a growth phase and continues to grow. We were aware of the sunset being in place and also had a concern about wanting to make sure that we could address the priority site, which just got cleaned up this past year, and to be able to be prepared in the event that the sunset was not extended. To be able to still have some money in reserve to be able to deal with sites. As I had indicated, we've got a significant number of sites out there of concern, 3,000 sites that still may need to be dealt with. And so we're looking ahead to those sites that will come in the future.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
Go ahead with Limmer first.
Senator Limmer, go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, as we look at this, we're I think everyone recognizes the importance and priority of cleaning up these sites. However, and I would think it's a very vital priority issue for all of our community, but when I look at taxing two people at a point of sale, I'm wondering if we're really using the broad revenue source that we should use in order to cure this problem. We're now taxing, if we continue with a deed tax expansion, which we've already done a few years ago, it's just that Hennepin and Ramsey have a unique situation where they are given that authority to tax separately. I think we're on a slow motion train to cure the problem. We've heard of all these sites for many years, and now we're taking just a little bit, not from a broader tax policy, but we're taking it from a point of sale when someone sells their home. And keep in mind, and I don't like increasing the cost of point of sale for housing. I think housing is one of those vital rights that a person has an opportunity to achieve. But we're trying to cure a major public policy question with a very finite resource and a point of sale where there's only two players, a buyer and seller. If you don't sell, if you don't buy, you don't contribute to curing that problem. At the same time, we've had deed tax increases. We've had mortgage registration tax increases in recent years. We've had the cost of regulation on building codes in the past 10 years that still keeps changing, and it still impacts the cost of housing, not to mention when you get into new housing, the cost of rezoning and other applications. We have conservation fees that we've added onto that point of sale, also trying to cure a broad public policy question. But instead of going to a broad resource, we're going to go to that one transaction, that one point in time, a buyer and seller will only contribute to solving that problem. And I just think going toward a deed tax increase, and we see it now, it seems like it's the cash cow of all these special projects, we're now going to that point of sale to raise money. And I just think that we should address this broad public policy question in the priority that it deserves. And we should establish a broader revenue stream for it. I think that behooves us. I think it's responsible. It doesn't put us in a long timeline to cure these problems. We might be able to cure those problems quicker. And so
I'm not real excited about removing the sunset. I wasn't excited about it, as you might guess, 10 years ago. But I'm thinking we have, I just think it's the wrong tool to handle a very large problem. It's kind of like going out to hunt elephants with a pea shooter. And I really think we need to address this problem in a more responsive way.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Rest.
Well, I appreciate Senator Limmer's comments, and I guess I have a couple of responses. One is that the policy of using a very, very minimal charge against at the point of sale was debated 10 years ago, and it was given a chance to see whether or not those dollars that were collected in that way, in a very minimal way, could have a positive impact. And I think that the description of the projects that have been given in the handout show that it is possible by doing the cleanup to when there's other, you know, other funds have been exhausted, that leverages really significant economic development and housing and whatever else that would not have occurred without the dollars that made the cleanup, completed the cleanup. And as for using a pea shooter to bring down an elephant, one of the comments that Governor Pawlenty makes over and over again is that we should not let the perfect stand in the way of the good. Would we like to have hundreds of millions of dollars for the things that everybody would decide are worthwhile, for education, for the environment, for health care, for transportation? Well, the answer to that is yes. In a perfect world, whatever the resources are that meet what our values are, we'd like to have them. However, if we only go there and we do not take incremental actions in order to do the good, then I think we're not doing good public policy. So we're never going to find a pea shooter that's going to bring down an elephant. And I can't think of a way to make that analogy work for what this program is. But I do think that this small amount of D-tax that has been in place now for 10 years deserve to continue. It is not, quote, a new tax, although obviously it's new to anybody who's selling a house. But it's not a new tax. It's one that's been in place. It's one that people know is going to be assessed against them at that particular time. So this is not something that's saying let's have a 50% or 100% or 200% increase in the D tax for other good and worthwhile things. It is saying that this tax that is in place for these two counties with these myriad of troubled ground sites, that it be allowed to continue. So I appreciate your concern about the all of the costs that are seemingly increasing on the sale of real estate, but this is just continuing one that is already in place.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before, I think we need some more work on these bills before you include them on any bill. My concern is the original tax, the waste tax, was created to take care of Superfund sites and the cleanup on them. Obviously, we've expanded that definition quite a bit. I want to see from the counties what they're raising in the waste disposal tax. And since Senator Betzold's bill is up next, I'd like Anoka County to provide their waste disposal tax also. And then I'd also like the budgets for your Superfund sites, the cleanup, the I think we should look at what we're bringing in, what we're putting out, before we continue to take money in on deed taxes and registry taxes to do basically the same, the thing that originally the waste disposal tax was supposed to take care of. And it sounds like there's some extra money out there, so we're building a program. We're expanding a program. So before we go forward with the bill, I'd like to work on the bill and look at the original grounds behind it, the waste disposal tax, the Superfund sites and their budgets, and then...
These are not Superfunds.
Mr. Chairman, none of this money goes to Superfund sites, and I would...
Mr. Chair, they're indicating there's landfill.
Wait. Senator Rest, go ahead.
I don't think that the language of the statutes have been changed, and maybe Ms. Selner has 383B81 in front of her. I have the actual 383B80, which and also the one for Ramsey County that indicates the authority to impose the rate, which is what we are, the section of which we are repealing the expiration of, but we're not changing or proposing any kind of change to the actual environmental response fund language. And so there's no new thing, there's no expansion of authority. And I just would also repeat that what the fund is used for is to mitigate the contamination of the land. But it's a worthy question to ask, well, after you've done that, then what? Well, then we show you in these brochures the kinds of things that have happened because the contamination of the land has been mitigated. Not that that there are any bricks and mortar that are being used, these dollars are being used for. That's not the case. However, it's a legitimate question to say, okay, so you cleaned it up. What is it, just grass now? Well, some of it may be green space and left like that. However, it is, I think it's a responsible answer from the counties to let you know what projects, the land having been cleaned up, are available for projects that improve the quality of life and the economic well-being of these two counties. It's not Superfund, Senator Johnson.
Senator Ortman, a follow-up? Excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Rest. I think the legitimate question that I'm trying to pose is I want to see what the waste disposal tax is bringing in.
And I noted that issue, Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, and we will get you that information.
There's about 3 weeks, Senator Johnson, before we're going to consider actually voting on this. So we have plenty of lobbyists for these counties here. So I would advise maybe that you spend some time with Senator Johnson to help make her comfortable about the idea of probably moving the sunset out. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the county commissioner from Ramsey County.
Yes.
A couple of questions. First, with respect to the Twin Lakes redevelopment, I just read about that. You're redeveloping the Roseville Truck Terminal Hub, and it's been a 20-year project. The phase will clean up 45 acres of spilled petroleum and contaminated groundwater, and then include 400 new commercial light industrial jobs, 540 new ownership units, and continuing on. It sounds like a very valuable project. What part of these dollars were used for that redevelopment, the $725,000 loan, and what part would have come from Superfund, if any?
None from Superfund. None of these are Superfund. Oh, Mr. Chair, I apologize. I apologize.
Rutland, Commissioner, go ahead.
Thank you. $750,000, the cleanup cost went in. The cleanup cost was $8,600,000. And those were all responsible for the whole development. So the only part we put in was $725,000 of that $8.6 million cleanup cost.
Mr. Chair, all of that $725,000 went to the cleanup of the spilled petroleum and contaminated groundwater?
100%.
Okay. And if I could continue, Mr. Chair, Commissioner, I'm wondering about your fund balance. Hennepin County has $8 million as a fund balance. What's your fund balance on this account?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I am delighted you asked that question. All of ours is out the door, and we left $1.3 million of requests on the table that we couldn't fund. So, in fact, one of our goals was to appear here so that we could tell you every dime. We made a new award since this was printed up, because we printed this up beforehand. As you may or may not know, the Globe site, which is located on the east side of St. Paul, we appropriated $350,000. It's not on this. The Shalom site, where there was also pollution, we put in $150,000, and Moundsville School District, we put in $50,000. So all of ours is out the door, except what is being generated since January of 2007. And as Senator Rest, Mr. Chair, mentioned, in Hennepin County, in the original legislation, the Max and Steel Dale Street Shops, now called the Great Northern Business Center, was highlighted as one of those sites that needed to be cleaned up. If you drive right out the Capitol and go just a little bit east and north, you will see the Max and Steel Dale Street Shop. It is 100% done and has jobs, and it has really just done a marvelous thing to the rest of the community there. And so, you know, one of the I remember on the original language is it was sites like the one that Senator Rest mentioned in Hennepin County, as well as the Max and Steel. So we only have begun to touch the number of polluted sites in Ramsey County.
Thank you.
Senator DeVille.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to echo your request to the folks with some information and knowledge. I think it would be useful to the committee to, you know, to provide committee members with kind of contaminated lands, 101, how we distinguish what the sources are, you know, how this fits into that larger picture, and what the funding history has been. I mean, I recall very well that Superfund federal sources have diminished greatly, which has presented a challenge. It's these are some valid questions. There's clearly some confusion. I believe there's some being created by some other interests as well. So it'd be helpful to really get an understanding of how we deal with contaminated lands and how all this money intersects.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Rest.
I do think along that line as well, it would be valuable to get just a report on the score tax that Senator Johnson referenced, and a representative from Hennepin County has told, just whispered to me, that they do collect $3 million a year on the score tax. It is used for recycling and return to municipalities. But we probably would be useful to see what that raises and the flow through to municipalities for recycling efforts in other counties as well.
Senator Johnson, when you have your subcommittee work done, would you share it with the other members of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, last year when this came before us, Chair Pogemiller suggested that we do a lot of delving into, this goes back many, many years when a joint and several first came to the state on landfill cleanup. So it's interesting to me in this conversation to see what was originally developed to address the problem, and that's where I use the word expanded, has changed. And I'd like to see if enough money was raised to actually seal some of those contaminated landfills, and where the money is going now, how it's being brought in, where it's going now. So, yeah, it's Superfund 101. Thank you, Senator Dibble.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, just a follow-up comment from me. I think, you know, we have the score tax. I'm not sure why we have to have another tax. I mean, the consolidation of these taxes would make some sense to me. And so maybe.
Recycling.
Pardon me?
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, the score tax used in Hennepin County for recycling.
And it's a different tax.
It's not for.
Cleanup, is it? No, it's...
Madam Chair and Senator Rest, my concern is across the state of Minnesota, we have every conceivable tax, and we think of new ones all the time. And I think that we have to stop at some point saying we're going to find more things to tax in the state of Minnesota. It gets very difficult for the taxpayers to understand what their tax burden is and where they're getting taxed. And so I'm not opposed to this bill. I'm not in favor of this bill. I'd like to learn more. It sounds like they've got some great projects going in Ramsey County. They're actually using these funds. The fund balance in Hennepin County is concerning because whether or not we sunset this bill, they're going to continue spending this money for the next 3 years, and they don't need to raise money to do that. So I'm trying to figure out the overall picture and the value in continuing this tax on the availability of this tax in these counties and whether it should be expanded to other counties or whether we could use the current tax structure and actually for once in the history of the state of Minnesota, sunset a tax and let it end. Wouldn't that be shocking? So I think we should consider all those things.
Those of you that are representing counties, you might want to spend some time with the committee members. Chair lays over Senate file
Chair,
6.
Can I just ask?
Senator Sindra?
Senator Rest, just maybe as an example, these projects that are noted in the back of this flyer, all very nice looking. And I'm trying to understand this tax a little bit, but for instance, they were on the front end, I suppose, beneficiaries of this tax. On the back end, though, did they also pay it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sinjim, I yes. don't understand the question.
Just for instance, Great Northern Business Center, that looks like a substantial, I don't know if it's $10 million or $20 million, but as there were deeds and mortgages filed for that project, presumably there were, did they also then pay into the fund?
Mr. Chair, specifically on the Great Northern, is the redevelopment costs were $26,725,000. The old present value was $758,815. The previous current taxing capacity was $15,710. The future value now that it's in operations is $14,323,500, and the future taxing capacity is $2,861,470. So the goal is to get the properties
right
back in production on the tax rolls and all of this. If you're asking do they pay into the IRF, it would be only as the properties are sold.
Ms. Chair, and to the witness, they would have a deed tax as well, right? They would have
yes.
paid the deed tax
yes.
on the into this fund as well, right, in a portion with their value?
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes, sir.
So at $26 million, that was a fairly substantial.
That is the whole goal of this is Mr. Chair, to make sure that then as the properties are sold, because this development was already, you know, being created, so as those properties are sold in all of the projects, that they would be paying not only the mortgage deed tax, but they would be paying property
right.
taxes as well.
Okay.
As well
Thank
as
you.
A variety of others.
Mr. Chair?
Well, Senator Ortman.
I'm assuming that both of the counties have economic development authorities. Can those funds be used for these same types of programs?
The Senator issue Rest? Of county economic development authority will probably come before this committee a little bit later.
Charlie is over Senate file 632, and I think Senator Ressler probably needs a little bit more work. I think the idea of a permanent repeal is probably not in the cards here.
I understand, Chairman. I appreciate the committee's time. And
thank you, Senator Ressler. Senator Betzel here. Senator Betzel, thank you for your patience. You've been sitting very patiently this morning.
Chair,
I know you've got a lot of work back at your office.
Mr. Chair, I sat here for 10 years, so what's a few, what's a little bit extra time? It's a pleasure to be back before the committee. As you know, I had to rotate off of it when I became a budget division chair, and I miss you. But the Senate File 495 is quite similar to the bill you just heard from Senator Rest. This bill would provide a 0.002 rate of the mortgage registry and deed tax to help clean up some of the polluted lands in Anoka County. I do have with me Spencer Pierce from Anoka County, and he'll describe. We have the PCA, Pollution Control Administration, has identified over 400 contaminated lands in Anoka County, and he'll describe in detail what we would propose to use the funding for.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Spencer Pierce, and I am manager of Environmental Services Section of Anoka County Community Health and Environmental Services. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on in support of Senate File 495. If the bill were to become law, I can assure you that we would put the authority to good use. As Senator Betzold said, this is our list of over 400 contaminated sites known to exist in the county. There are certainly many more that are yet to be documented. We find them virtually every week via complaints and other type of information. These sites range from simple things like leaking gasoline storage tanks to areas that have been used as dumping grounds for industrial and household waste over many years. As late as the early 1970s, Anoka County was basically rural and undeveloped. It was also used as a dumping ground for businesses located to the south. There were sections of property totally devoted to disposal of vehicles, tires, drums of waste, and the like. As Anoka County becomes increasingly urbanized, some types of businesses have relocated or closed and leaving contaminated property in their wake. For example, Anoka County began regulation of auto salvage yards in 1999. At the beginning of that period of time, there were 19 of those operations in the county. Today, there are 9. These sites are notorious for being polluted with gasoline, oil, lead, and other contaminants. Investigation and cleanup is expensive and time-consuming. To date, 2 of the 10 sites that have closed have been investigated, abated, and redeveloped, or rather, 2 of the sites have been investigated, abated, and redeveloped, while the third is completing cleanup operations. All 3 of these sites have been cleaned, have received financial or technical assistance from local units of government, and all are located in areas that are considered to be prime real estate. Several large-scale cleanups, and this is the Superfund sites that we've heard mentioned here, have occurred under the federal and Superfund programs. Today, funding for these programs has been reduced and diverted. And from a practical point of view, these programs won't work well to address the smaller sites that exist in the county. The type of program that works to rehabilitate these polluted properties and makes them usable again has some key components. It involves partnerships between multiple levels of government, state, federal, regional, municipal, and private interests. This bill also requires that matching funds be sought from those very partners. It must have a funding mechanism that is predictable so these partnerships can be made. It must have assurance for the private entity that their liability is related to the purchase, development, and use of previously contaminated property is limited. I believe that this bill provides the framework to effectively and efficiently accomplish all of this. I urge you to give positive consideration to Senate File 494-5. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Mr. Pierce, thank you. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Betzold, I keep hearing that all of the conversation about this bill is focused on cleanup of polluted sites. But if you look on page 2, lines 15 through 16, it seems like it goes way past that, and that's to improve property for future economic development, recreation, housing, transportation, or even rail traffic. A little different than the Hennepin and Ramsey description of where their money goes. And you know, like I mentioned before, cleaning up our pollution should be our priority. And once again, we're now going back to the point of sale to raise registration tax just on your taxpayers that are buying properties. But it's going above and beyond that. Could you kind of tell me what the county's thinking on this expanded use of this money?
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, you know, our intention here was frankly to copy virtually what the Hennepin and Ramsey County had. The need is there. The need is great. And frankly, I don't think there'd be any intention, you know, to do the recreation or housing things. I mean, we want to clean up contaminated land. So you made a good point. The you know, that part, frankly, is not one of our goals. We've got lots of needs in contaminated lands, and that's what this would be exclusively used for. So if it's not in the other bills, frankly, Mr. Chair, we don't need this in our bill. We just want the cleanup part.
Senator Betzold, Senator Limerick, counsel tells me that these are the same uses as Hennepin and Ramsey County currently have in law.
The testimony from earlier, they didn't talk about the expanded use. They focused most of their attention on polluted sites, as we may recall. So that's why I came to this conclusion. I didn't know that Hennepin County had used point-of-sale taxes for real estate transactions for furthering rail traffic in Hennepin County. That's new to me. But council is saying that is recognized in state statute, that Hennepin County can use those funds collected by an expanded deed tax currently for rail traffic?
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, the language that's in both the Dakota and the Hennepin or the Anoka County bills is a copy of what's in the current statutes for Ramsey and Hennepin County.
Okay. One other question I did have is on page 2, line 10. There's reference to liability arising out of ownership or remediation or the use of the land, and it says any liability. Is that in current law now, that any liability would be covered, or are we straying into new territory on liability questions? It seems like a very broad reference.
Again, I believe that this is verbatim what's currently in law, and Senate Council mm-hmm. indicates that this is current law.
Mr. Chair, one last reference, and maybe it's already in existing law, but on lines 24 through 26, we talk of giving this county permission to use land that's been acquired, the ability to resell it at a fair market value. I'm assuming that's for as a profit-making venture. Is that normal for government to buy up property and then sell it for a profit? Do we do that as a means to raise revenue for the governing body? Because now it seems like it's a forward intent to do exactly that. We do know that government can acquire property, and if the change of planning is created, change of purpose, they may need to sell that land. But now we're giving them forward authority to acquire, hold, and then sell at a future fair market value, and I'm assuming that would be for profit.
Well, Senator Betzold,
this is the same language that's in the Hennepin and Ramsey County currently in law.
And Mr. Chair, if I could point out, I think as a matter of public policy, if government is going to sell land, they want to get the best dollar for it. You know, and in fact, if it's sold at less than fair market value, that would raise serious questions as to why somebody got a sweetheart deal. So this particular provision not only says that it has to be resold at fair market value, but that the proceeds must be deposited in the Environmental Response Fund. So it's not going to go to the general fund. It has to go to help clean up more land.
Sarah Ortman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Betzel, the concern I have with this is that definition of the uses of the fund, which is extremely broad. You know, paragraph 1 talks about funds being used for condemning lands or property that are contaminated. Paragraph 2 talks about holding harmless or indemnifying those that are cleaning up the property, remediating them. Number 3 talks about remediating the actual costs. Number 4 talks about costs related to the pollution or the contamination. But number 5 is the one that's very troubling. 5 allows these counties to pay for the costs associated with improving the property for economic development, for recreation, for housing, transportation, or rail traffic. Now we're not talking about cleanup at all. We're talking about development of the property, which was our grave concern when we were talking about Senator Rest's proposal to continue these projects. It seems to me that it's not a legitimate use of these funds to be improving the properties for economic development. At least it can be legitimate if we say it's legitimate, but I don't think that that was the intention of the original bill, and I think that may be where some of us are having some difficulty with this, that there are other uses of funds for improving properties for purposes of economic development, and this maybe is not the best use of dollars that are raised through deed taxes.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Workman, I can assure you that if this legislation is approved, I believe every penny would be spent on cleaning up polluted lands. We'd never even get to number five, but that's a discussion the tax committee is going to have to meet as a determine as it looks at the other bills that are worded identically.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman, I think maybe the chair will talk with Hennepin and Ramsey County about if we extend their sunset, if they feel a need to have lines 15 and 16 that's in Senator Betzold's bill included in future collections on their in their counties.
Well, and Mr. Chair, that was going to be my point, is that if we're going to go forward, I would hope that any county that wanted to go forward with this would be willing to amend the legislative authority to take out paragraph 5.
The chair will have that discussion with Hennepin and Ramsey also.
Sure.
Any other questions from members of the committee? Senator Limmer.
Just one last one. As we've had this discussion, it kind of gives me the impression that counties don't seem to have any other money but this new source to cure their ground contamination. I'm assuming that counties do have funds or fund balances that have been around for a while. Pollution certainly has been recognized for 20, 30 years of serious nature in contemporary political talk. Does Anoka have existing funds? What did you do to cure contaminated spots before considering this? Do you have a funding priority by your county? Do you have existing fund balances now?
Mr. Chair, Senator Limner, we, in the years I've been with Anoka County, have attempted to engage the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and their programs that are established to clean up sites as well as we can. However, their resources are limited, both in money and in staffing, and unless there's businesses are willing to go into what's known as a VIC program. We have had little success with that. The sites that have been cleaned up through municipalities in partnership with the Met Council and private partners. So it's we really don't have a balance that we've been able to use for that purpose.
Mr. Chair, again, I just want to reiterate. We have this huge public policy problem, and we're again using a point of sale to collect money, and I just think it's the wrong way to go. And I am not saying that we shouldn't address the problem, but I think the public would probably recognize even a levy increase if it meant that money was focused on curing these serious pollution problems, and just relying on a buyer and seller of a piece of property to raise the money to cure this problem. It's triggering other things. We're now having, in recent years, we've had increases in mortgage registration tax for other purposes. State deed tax was raised not too long ago. We've got all these little, everybody has on their radar screen, if you want revenue, now they're coming to a point of sale on a real estate transaction. And I don't know if that's the right way to cure some of these big problems in public policy.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, of course, from a county standpoint, they've only got one real source of revenue stream, and that's the property taxes. And at some point, if these contaminated lands are not going to go away, the homeowner might wind up paying for it through higher property taxes in the end. So at some point, it's going to come down to the properties. The bad ones are all around us, and if you happen to buy a home and find out that it's contaminated, is it you know, shouldn't you get some help in cleaning up? Because the contaminators are long gone. The whole idea is that those of us who are left behind have to find some way to clean this stuff up.
Members, we're going to get one more whack at this on the next bill. So Senator Betzel, chair lays over Senate file 495.
Second, Mr. Chair, members.
For possible inclusion.
Everybody wants it, huh?
Senator Sieben is going to
Homestead should get on this deal.
Explain to us, on behalf of Senator Metzen, Senate file 1013.
Right away.
What you got?
I don't think I've ever seen any.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. This bill is similar to the ones we just discussed, so I don't think in the interest of time we need to go through it too specifically. In response to some of the questions that were raised by Senator Limmer, I think that on line 2.13, I would like to move an oral amendment to add the word remediation between the line, between the words the and cost, so that line 2.13 reads paying for the remediation costs associated with improving the property for economic and on and on.
Senator Sieben, isn't that covered on line 2.10?
I guess I don't understand what you're asking.
Well, I think remediation is paying the costs of it is authorized under 2.10. Where did you think it needed to be inserted?
On line 2.13 in subdivision, under subdivision 2 in the fifth section of it.
Senator Sieben, I think the odds are pretty good that lines 2.13 and 2.14 are probably going to come out of the bill.
Well, my point, Mr. Chair, and to Senator Limmer, is that we want this money to pay for the costs of remediating the land so that that land can then be used for other purposes, such as were outlined by Ramsey County or Hennepin County. The point here is we want the money to be go towards the cleanup of the land so that that those properties can then be used for economic development or recreational housing or rail line. I don't think there's no intention in the language to use these funds for actual, you know, the costs that are associated once the land is cleaned up. And I was just attempting to clarify that language by stating that the costs are for the remediation work of the polluted lands. So we want the money to go towards the pollution cleanup, not for any of these other things, not for the actual economic development or rail traffic, but for the cleanup itself. Well,
Senator Sieben, that's my point. I think we allow for that, provide for that on line 2.10. But Senator Limmer?
Not only do we account for remediating, the cost of remediating in lines 10 on page 2, but also 11, we also recognize remediating costs associated with remediating land also. So I think, Senator Sieben, you're going in the right direction. It's just that the two previous lines have recognized the remediation costs already.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
But wouldn't, Mr. Chair, wouldn't lines 2.13 and 2.14, given the qualification that Senator Sieben is suggesting, help clarify the legislative intent further?
I think you're right, Ms. Chair. Senator Sieben, I think, recognizes the remediating cost in acquiring land or property in line 10. I think we recognize the remediating cost on property that's polluted or contaminated with hazardous substances is found on lines 11 and 12. And then the remediation cost, I believe, is what Senator Sieben is recognizing if the county plans on going any further with these other things. Remediation costs would be only covered for those
for that direction. Am I correct, Senator Sieben?
Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, that's correct. I think there was a little bit of confusion, I'm sorry, because I think that some of the line numbers between Senator Betzel's bill and mine are a little different.
So I think, Mr. Chair, I think the concern still is alive that some of our members on the committee would want to make sure that this fund, if we go forward with this tax on on deed tax or mortgage registration tax, would be done for the purposes of cleaning the land, but not expanding necessarily the economic development or recreation or housing projects that would be an improvement on the land. That way we're focusing on the greater public purpose of curing the pollution problems rather than diverting these funds into other things, and it just takes longer. Is it more important to clean polluted sites, or is it more important to improve the site as we clean it? I lean more into the idea of let's get the ground taken care of as fast as possible and as a larger volume of it. I think that's the greater public good, if we have to even go as this revenue source.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But often, as we saw with the map in, Hennepin County, we got jillions of green dots. And, often the spark that causes one of those, an application for the funds, so one of these red dots can be turned into a green dot, is someone's idea, public entity or private entity, to do some sort of a redevelopment. So while it would be nice to have enough money just to blast through Hennepin County and turn all these red dots into green dots, meaning that we're enacting some sort of program to clean them, often what triggers that is the fact that there's a housing development that might be slated for that site, and then a lot of money gets leveraged to that purpose, and the ERF can come in and do some gap or be the last money in or do some of the things that were described earlier.
Senator Sieben, do you have a witness?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have Mr. Greg Connett.
Conant,
excuse me, the physical development director for Dakota County.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I wanted to, as Senator Sieben said, I don't want to go into any great detail. You've heard a lot about these programs, but maybe highlight some of the information as it relates more specifically to Dakota County. We have identified to date approximately 2,400 waste sites in Dakota County that we're trying to find ways to clean up because they do cause damage for public health, the environment, and they interfere with development of land in our community. We have estimated at this point, and they're rough estimates, but it'll take approximately $150 million to clean up these 2,400 sites. And so it's a huge problem that we're trying to find as many resources as we can to deal with and to tackle that. Many of the sites are publicly owned, but also privately owned sites. The program that Dakota County has discussed would be using this money as incentive dollars, finding some way of cost sharing with landowners, whether that be public or private. All efforts would be exhausted to try to find responsible parties and make sure that responsible parties cleaned up those sites, if at all possible. I provided for your interest the bottom bullet of the first page was just an example of a site that had contamination on it. We tried to find solutions, and this private landowner is facing approximately $150,000 in assessment cost to clean up a site that's worth approximately $300,000, and of course they are in no position to be able to do that. It's those kind of things that we're seeing in many areas of our county. Car batteries were supposedly clean, crushed and used for septic systems. What we're finding now, those chips, as they're called, are floating to the surface. They do indeed have lead, in them, and we keep finding these every now and then, these type of sites. And the landowners had no idea whatsoever about it, and we're trying to find ways that we might be able to help them. I think if I could, we provided you some just examples of sites throughout the county. That's the second portion of your handout. We also provided you a map, a couple of maps of Dakota County that identifies where these sites are at, that we specifically provided you information on, so you had some idea, you know, what's going on and where, and that type of thing. And then finally, an overall county map that identifies the 2,400 sites and also categorizes them, so you have a better understanding of the magnitude and the challenge that we're facing. So, Mr. Chair, I want to thank you on behalf of the Dakota County Board. I'd also like to extend an apology. Our board met this morning. Both our chair and the chair of our legislative committee would like to have been here and addressed you, but because of the board meeting, they were unable to do so, and so you were stuck with me this morning. Thank you.
Senator Stephen, I noticed there is a, I think the committee members probably think that it's a significant difference between this proposal for Dakota County and that of the previous ones we heard, and that this one, as it's drafted, does not have any kind of a sunset on it.
Yes, Mr.
What's
Chair,
your
I'm
thought?
Sorry. I'm sorry I didn't point that out to the committee, but you know, if that's something that the committee feels strongly about, we're willing to put language in to make it consistent with the other bills. I'd just like to say, too, to address the committee, the overall need for this is, you know, many of these projects that are identified by the county will never qualify for Superfund status. They're not big enough. They don't have enough pollution. But the pollution is significant, and it poses a threat to the county's well-being and the county's, the public health. But, you know, I think, so the county and Ramsey County and Hennepin County have laid out how they have leveraged other funding sources that are available, but really there is a significant need to clean up some of these smaller sites to protect the public health. And in my opinion, this is a very modest proposal, a way to generate that revenue.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Seaman and committee, I think for me, what's surprising about the conversation we're having today is the description of waste sites is what is expanded. When I thought of waste sites, I thought of landfills. So when we're having this conversation today, it's all over the board. We're now doing residential property in this bill. So I think if we're going to expand the description of waste sites, then of course we're going to need expanded revenue sources. But I think we need a description, a narrow description, and we need to be focused on what a waste site is and use the waste tax that was originally created to address it, and then the conversation goes from there.
Senator Ortman.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Senator Stephen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in the interest of time, I just want to quickly point out, for instance, it isn't identified in here, and I don't even know if the county board would appreciate me saying this, but in the Swift manufacturing plant on the banks of the Mississippi River, for instance, those corporations where the meat processing took place many years ago, those industry or those companies are long gone. There's no there's no clear entity that's supposed to clean up that land, but walking along the Mississippi River there in South St. Paul, there's huge pieces of rebar. There's large pieces of concrete that are falling into the Mississippi River. And I only say that to you as that's just one example of where there's, you know, there's no identified entity that's ever going to clean up that land, but there is a need for that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator Seaman. That's exactly what Superfund litigation was based on, joint and several cleanup costs. It spreads out. It starts with Swift, and it spreads out to everybody umbrellaed under them. So there is an identified source to do that cleanup. And what we've done is we've decided that we'll try and legislate this kind of cleanup, and that's how the expansion of description keeps getting bigger.
Mr. Chair, I think there needs to be some for the committee's purpose, and maybe this needs to go to the Environment Committee, I'm not sure, but there needs to be some definition for committee members of a Superfund site, because many, like I said again, these projects will never qualify for Superfund status.
Anything else, members of the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Senator
Sieben or the witness, are there cleanup orders on any of these by the Pollution Control Agency that you know of, at least?
Mr. Chair, Senator, these that we've identified, there may be a handful that there are some cleanup orders. We at Dakota County typically step in for the PCA and handle those at the local level. And so those we would pursue, and I can't say to you matter-of-factly that a few of those may not be in this 2,400 that we've counted, but very, very, very few, if at all.
Mr. Chair, I'm beginning to feel like Senator Limmer, if I understand him, and that is with $120 million worth of cleanup effort here and collecting, as noted on page 2 here, had this been enacted in 2005, we would have collected a million one. That's like 100 years to get this done. It almost seems like if this is important, there ought to be a more robust source of money going after these kind of issues.
Senator Senjum, I appreciate your comments, and I'd just like to point out to the Mr. Chair that at least we came forward with a funding source. Like, as you has stated in previous bills, you appreciated that, so it's a start.
Senator Sieben, have a conversation with Senator Metzen about the idea of a sunset on his bill, and maybe we'll make, if we're going to move forward with this, we'll make all the sunsets consistent so that when we come back and revisit this someday, everybody will be in the room. Thank you. Chair lays over Senate File 1013 for possible inclusion.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Johnson.
A comment as we're going, this is now the fourth county that's come forward looking for this deed tax and mortgage registration tax. I'm sure there's every county in the state that has what could be expanded descriptions of waste sites.
I think we possibly could see more of them, and maybe we need to look at a broader policy, some permissive authority for counties.
Mr. Chair,
Senator.
Probably not for you to know this answer, but it seems to me I've gotten 500 emails on a deed tax proposal for the homeless, and so we're talking about issues like this competing against that one, or maybe they don't compete, but we'll see, I guess. But it seems like the deed tax is becoming the home of a lot of causes here, and I think we have to think about that.
Minnesota Association of Realtors.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I know you've had a lot of discussion and debate on this subject already, so I won't belabor it, but I do appreciate the opportunity to voice our opposition to...
Ms. Dory, your name for the record.
Thank you. Susan Diori, represent the Minnesota Association of Realtors. Again, I do appreciate the opportunity to at least express our concerns about utilizing the deed tax for many usages rather than mortgage registry and deed registration. I brought with me today some booklets to give you a sense of just exactly, it's probably no surprise to all of you that the housing market is certainly in decline right now. We're very concerned about mortgage equity being tapped out. So people are coming to the table when they're going to buy and sell their homes with first, second, and oftentimes third mortgages on their properties. Of course, every time we register a mortgage, there's going to be potentially three mortgages registered each time if they have three mortgages on their property. So we're sincerely concerned about the housing market in general right now, expanding taxes on just sellers and buyers certainly is not going to help the housing industry at this time. You've heard some definite expression of concern about the problems with contaminated properties here. And unfortunately, I do have to admit that the Hennepin and Ramsey deed tax was before my time here at the legislature. And perhaps we've already had the debate about whether or not the mortgage registry and deed tax should be utilized for land use cleanup, but we would certainly make an argument that not to place the burden just on buyers and sellers, but if this is a broader problem, that we look at broad-based taxes to resolve the problem. So I thank you again for the time to testify today, and I'd stand for any questions.
I think there's probably a feeling of the committee, Ms. Dory, that you're probably right, that this problem is probably larger than the deed tax. Thank you.
Sure.
Members, sorry for working into your lunch. I think the division is meeting tomorrow morning at 8:30 briefly. Chris?
No,
they're not. So this committee is coming back for a joint hearing with Committee on Finance on Thursday to talk about the budget forecast. This committee's adjourned. In this room, members. Will be from 6. I think he's over in Little Canada. I'm right by the Maplewood Mall, so it is not that far from 36. I'm not that far from
Oh, okay, so you don't have a little range community.
No. I live on Mesaba Avenue.
Oh, that's hilarious.
You know how I look for an address like that?